If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. If it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we're going to talk about it. And today we are talking about telehealth and reimbursement on telehealth. And what does all that mean? And do you need it? Joining me today is Juan Pablo Segura. He's the co-founder and president of Baby Scripts. And welcome to the show, Juan.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to share and tell you all about what we do in the pregnancy space.
Yeah. So in the paperwork that I've read about this, you're doing a lot with digital telehealth, or I guess digital is the same as telehealth, but telehealth reimbursements. But first of all, for those who may not know, what exactly is telehealth?
So you brought up a great question. And even in some of the distinction wrangling that you had there, there are actually different kinds of technology experiences that patients can have with their providers. So telehealth and telemedicine has traditionally been associated with patients and their providers having video visit, essentially like a FaceTime encounter-esque experience where, you know, you are talking to your doctor with video on, right? And so a lot of people have always thought about kind of healthcare technology innovation in that sense. But what a lot of people don't know is that there's been an explosion of additional kinds of digital virtual experiences that you can have with your doctor. And so it can be something as simple as you being able to chat through a kind of a chat app experience with your physician, to being able to experience a remote patient monitoring program where someone sends you a blood pressure cuff that's connected via Bluetooth to your phone and that can send that data back to your doctor's office. And so there's really been a massive explosion over the last 5 years in this whole idea of what's called digital health, which is everything outside of a video visit, FaceTime-esque encounter.
Okay. I get how having a blood pressure cuff and having that data sent back and it, you know, could monitor your heart rate as well, kind of like the Fitbits do, that can send your internal data to a doctor, but it can't tell the doctor how big your belly is, and is that the right size belly for how far along you are in a pregnancy?
Right, right. And so I think where it gets really interesting is that how healthcare is evolving, it no longer is a singular kind of modality or singular way of using technology, which was the video encounter. Now there are a panoply of additional tools and trackers and experiences that when combined with, for example, a video visit, so what's traditionally thought of as telemedicine, all of a sudden you can almost completely understand what's happening to the patient in the comfort of their own home. And so that's really where we thrive as a company, is that combination of, hey, sometimes you do need video, sometimes you do need to see a patient and the milestones that they're hitting visually. But, you know, for example, pregnant women, about 10 to 15% of maternal death comes from blood pressure related problems and complications. So if we can capture more blood pressure data points in the home and have a better understanding of how a patient is controlling their blood pressure while pregnant, they might, and they will, because this is what we build Baby Scripts around, is that you can detect life-threatening events immediately and alert the provider and address that specific problem. So essentially what's happening in healthcare is there's just this explosion of data, explosion of experiences that providers are now using to interact with their patients in almost a continuous fashion, which I believe is what's going to take healthcare into the next generation and what's going to start to reduce the cost of healthcare, improve outcomes, and really transform the patient experience, because no one likes spending time in a waiting room waiting an hour and a half to see their doctor for 5 minutes, right?
Right. And I can see how this would be good, because the U.S. has one of the highest baby mortality rates in the world. I mean, we are considered one of the best nations, and yet we have really high mortality rates in babies. But a lot of that seems to be centered on minorities. So why are minorities so much more at risk in the United States for having their babies die?
So that's definitely a loaded question because there are a lot of reasons why women of color definitely have higher maternal mortality and morbidity rates. So just because you might not die while you're pregnant doesn't mean that you can't have a complication that forever changes your life, like a stroke, which patients that suffer from blood pressure complications like preeclampsia can get. And I can kind of hit a couple, whether it's, straight out racism and how moms of color are treated in L&Ds and labor and delivery departments where, they're not getting the necessary attention. And this has been covered by the New York Times, Atlantic, and so many other publications, to structural barriers and structural kind of obstacles to accessing care in the first place. And technology can't solve every single societal ill. But what I can tell you is that we genuinely believe that technology can at least address the structural access to care issues in this country. And so access to care really focuses on this idea of, can you see your doctor when you need to see your doctor? And in underserved communities, and especially areas that where patients are on Medicaid and have obviously socioeconomic risk and challenges, there are a lot of structural issues. So take where we are from, and we're based, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is the capital of the world. And if you live on the east side of the city, there is no L&D for you. And guess who lives in the east side of the city? Majority of it is African-American women. And also a majority of the Medicaid beneficiaries live in the east side of the city. And so for them to just see their doctor for 15 minutes, they have to take 4 buses and 2 trains all the way across town to see their doctor, because that's where all the L&D and larger kind of provider networks are situated and exist. But even high-risk doctors, so MFMs, maternal fetal medicine specialists, which is the physicians that see the high-risk pregnant moms, there are no MFM clinics on the east side of the city as well. So it really is kind of structurally, there are issues in getting care in the first place. And so we think that all of these digital experiences can start to soften those barriers, because guess what? Now you don't have to take all of those different forms of transportation to see your doctor. You can just turn on your phone, use a telemedicine appointment to see your physician, or you can also take your blood pressure at home, and that data point immediately goes to your doctor for them to confirm that you're safe and you're doing well throughout your pregnancy. And I'll just kind of hit one more point, because not a lot of people know this. There's actually a critical shortage of OBGYN doctors. So add all the structural challenges that moms have. We need 7,000 more OBGYNs right now today. And so when you think about it, the only way to even get care or have patients that typically have problems accessing care, the care that they need, is we would need more doctors. And obviously you can't just change that overnight, but technology can extend and make a physician able to see 2 or 3 times the amount of patients that they would only be able to see in the office. They can now do that through asynchronous remote patient monitoring, telemedicine, and other digital experiences. So you can see that the issues around access are crucial to how we start to solve the problems that we have in maternal mortality and morbidity, especially in on the racial side.
We do need to take a break. We will be right back with Juan Pablo Segura. He is the co-founder and president of Baby Scripts.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Yeah. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way, we're talking about it. And today we are talking about telehealth medicine and digital medicine and how that can affect your life, especially if you are pregnant. So joining me today is Juan Pablo Segura. He's the co-founder and president of Baby Scripts. So in the first segment, we went over broadly why it's so important for people to get quicker or better access to their doctors, especially as we were talking about if you are high risk or underserved person who just doesn't normally get regular visits to their doctor. But I want to talk about financially, if you are one of these underserved people and you're saying, hey, you know, you should be doing more digital contact with your doctors, a lot of them don't have access to internet or Wi-Fi. So here we're talking about, hey, this is going to be great if you are high risk or you're one of the people that has to take four buses to get to a doctor, but they also don't have internet access. So how are we supposed to help them?
No, it's a great question. And I think you've got to dig into, can we list out the financial implications of just the obstetrical, or what are the decisions that patients, especially, you know, at-risk patients or, you know, patients on Medicaid, what are some of the decisions that they have to make every day to just get care? And first of all, you talked about kind of access to just technology. A good thing is in this demographic, so we're looking at patients between the ages of 18 through 40, more than 94% of these patients have smartphones. So, you know, when you start thinking about the benefits of digital interventions, digital experiences like Baby Scripts, you actually have a population that already has invested in the kind of infrastructure that they need to interact with their physician digitally, which is the smartphone. Now, the question is bandwidth. The question is kind of consistent internet. And yeah, you have to be very cognizant of that as you build a digital experience. But I think the groundwork is actually pretty well laid in the space. But as we talk about, or we think about, what are some of the life choices that patients have to make in getting care? You know, put yourself in the shoes of, you know, a patient that is obviously on Medicaid and is pregnant, and what they have to now do. And so if you look at the pregnancy experience, patients typically have to go into their provider's office 14 times throughout the pregnancy. And so those 14 visits require you, if you have children at home, you have to get childcare because you've got to leave either your job or you've got to go early in the morning or late at night. And you've got to dedicate whether it's an hour and a half to get to the clinic. We talked earlier about patients having to take several buses, trains to just get to the doctor. So that's not a quick experience. But so just one way, you're spending an hour, hour and a half to get to the doctor. You're waiting in the waiting room for another hour. And then you're seeing your provider, and then you somehow have to get home, right? And so you think about the dynamics at home. Most of these patients are working hourly jobs. So what you're telling a mom, like straight up, is you've got to choose to either get paid and work or to go to the doctor. And I think that is inherently unfair, especially for a patient population that generally has more complications than their counterparts, right? Or patients that are middle to upper class. And so already there's an unequal setup and distribution in how patients get their care, because you're making more demands on a mom who's just trying to make it and might have more kids and has to hire a babysitter or find childcare for the other kids to go in and see their provider in the first place. So, you know, the structural issues are real. And we don't talk enough about the dynamics that exist and essentially the demands that we ask our moms or the decisions that we require our moms to make, which, again, I think are completely unjust.
And that is a financial hit if you have to leave your job or hire a babysitter. But what is the benefit for the companies or the doctors who provide this type of service, this digital health service?
So we, Baby Scripts as a company, we sell to both providers. So think of a large health system that employs the OBGYN doctors. And we also have payer sponsorships and relationships, and they're also our customers. But an overwhelming majority of our customers are the provider community, the doctors that see you as a pregnant patient. And what we do, and when we go and sell to them, One of the big challenges, and I talked about how there aren't enough OBGYNs. And so what does that mean for you as a patient when there aren't enough OBGYNs? Well, have you ever tried calling your doctor? Or let's say you move to a new city and you have to get a new doctor. Have you ever tried calling and saying, hey, I'm a new patient, I'm looking to be seen next week? And they almost laugh and say, next week, not going to happen. How about 8 to 10 weeks from now? Right. So think of the dynamics of you as a patient and your experience when you have to essentially, maybe it might be an urgent medical issue where you need to get seen tomorrow and the providers like literally cannot fit you in because they're seeing 30 patients a day, 5 minutes each at a time, which also has its own set of terrible patient experience problems. But that's structural, that's an access problem. So I kind of go back to access. So what we do when we work with providers is we say, okay, we need to obviously generate better outcomes through remote patient monitoring and through digital experiences. So use baby scripts to obviously monitor your moms and make sure they're okay in between appointments, but also use as essentially a way to automate care and allow the patient to do their care at home so that you're getting the same data points that you would typically be getting in the office, but you're now getting them at home so that you now have more slots or appointments that you can spend on patients that need to see you and that are on a wait list. And so that's the typical kind of arrangement that we have with a provider. And so, and kind of philosophically, what's core to our company is we actually require and we don't allow providers to charge patients for using baby scripts. So patients get baby scripts for free, which solves some of the price and socioeconomic related potential constraints that might exist for a patient not being able to afford a remote patient monitoring experience. So patients get it for free, providers pay us, and we essentially transform a provider's practice so that they can see more patients, they can make more money. Obviously, it positively impacts the bottom line, but they're able to get those patients off of the wait list, which, as we know, is really important for both patient care and for practice dynamics.
Well, is that the type of reimbursements that I saw in the press release on this? You're talking about telehealth reimbursement.
Yeah. Okay. So this is crucial. Payer reimbursement. So health insurance reimbursement. A lot of what providers do is tied to what they can get paid for. And so whether it's a flu shot or a procedure in the office, the big health insurance companies have to recognize that this action, getting a flu shot, is worth them paying for that cost. And so in our space, in the digital health space, because it's so nascent, most health insurance companies don't know how to pay for these kinds of services. And so a lot of the time what they do is they just completely shut themselves down and just refuse to even consider paying for and reimbursing the doctor for using these digital technologies and digital therapeutics. And so what we did, we have a lot of data that shows that we can reduce readmissions, preeclampsia problems, excessive weight gain in pregnancy. We went to our legislative body in Washington, D.C., and we convinced them that they should mandate that all health insurance companies in D.C. need to pay for these tools because they do deliver and they improve the standard of care. They improve outcomes, patient management, and all the benefits. And so sometimes we sell directly to plans, and we are able to get health insurance companies to pay for baby scripts, but it's still a very nascent space that requires a little bit of a push.
Does the mandate that you got approved, does that cover all digital health venues or only baby scripts?
So we couldn't get all digital health tools, unfortunately. We were able to at least get a foot in the door by saying that all health insurance companies need to reimburse providers for digital maternity tools in the postpartum setting. And so it's a very specific area of the maternity journey. So, you know, obviously maternity isn't just during the pregnancy, it's what happens after. And a majority of women suffer from postpartum depression, postpartum hypertension. It's actually the number one reason for maternal death postpartum is you having a blood pressure problem after you deliver your baby. So we were able to convince the council to at least authorize and mandate that health insurance companies in DC had to pay any provider or any doctor that delivered a digital health tool to moms in the postpartum time period. But that in and of itself is a massive movement in the space. Like, people have been trying to do this for the last 10 years.
I don't know how many apps like BabyScript are out there.
So, I mean, just this was like a number from when I last looked at this, which was in 2018. There are more than 100,000 mobile health apps in the App Store. Cool. And this was 2 years ago. I can only imagine that that number has blown up, since then. But most larger health systems and providers work with like one of three companies, Amwell, Doctor on Demand, or Teladoc. And so most of those companies power whatever video visit experience that you've probably used with your doctor in the last 6 or 7 months.
Especially with the pandemic on, I'm guessing everybody jumped on board the digital health.
Even when COVID hit, most health insurance companies, every plan essentially lists out all the things that they will pay for. And like we mentioned, and like we talked about, most of the time, digital remote patient monitoring and digital experiences aren't on that schedule. They don't have a code associated with delivering the app or the experience. And this kind of goes to show the difficulty of even using telemedicine during kind of the initial COVID outbreak. A lot of plans didn't even have video visits on that schedule. So they had to like emergency add new codes and new procedures that are done over video to kind of help providers. So this is the state of the space. Everything is so new that like people just don't know how to consume these experiences, which is why there's obviously kind of a lag in these things being built and these things being adopted in healthcare.
So me as a patient, when I walked into the doctor's office, I had to pay a $35 copay. But I do remember before the pandemic, I got really ill one year. It was the flu. And I was like, I can't even drive to the doctor. I can't do that. And I was fortunate that our insurance company did allow telemedicine through if you picked a certain provider. And so I did for the first time a couple of years ago, dialed in, but my copay for that was only $10. So it was actually a lesser copay just to talk to a doctor over the computer than it was to see them in person.
When you start looking at kind of the structural cost of how we interact with our doctors, we have to go to a location. And what comes with the location? Doctors have a lease and they have to pay for the lights and they have to pay the amount of cost that just exists in just simply running a practice. It typically costs a doctor about $40 to just see you. Like that's in just fixed cost. Like it's not variable. It doesn't relate to them doing a procedure and the cost of the equipment, whatever. No, it just costs $40 in the office to see you. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And so the whole telemedicine experience eliminates all of that cost. I mean, doctors can see you in their home, like how we're all working right now.
If I was sick now and pregnant and I had BabyScript, if I dial into my doctor, I wouldn't even have to do the $10 copay, or would I?
Exactly. What we've done is we exist in this concept, and I know this is going to get really technical for the listeners, but it's called asynchronous remote patient monitoring. So synchronous is when you have someone on the other side immediately responding, whether it's through a video or a chat. Asynchronous is when essentially the system itself collects data and elevates certain issues to a doctor that then brings an intervention. And so what we've done is we use asynchronous interactions to essentially eliminate even having to interact with the doctor unless there's a problem. So if you take your blood pressure, you answer questions through the BabyScript app and everything checks out, there's no need for you to go to the doctor. And that eliminates even the copay, right? And so you kind of look at this from a macro perspective. If all providers and all pregnant patients use BabyScript, reduce or automate anywhere between 30 to 50% of routine obstetrical appointments. So you can just see massive reductions in cost to the healthcare system by just automating very specific parts of the patient experience.
We are running out of time, but is there anything else we should know about in terms of digital health and maternity care?
Yeah, I think this is just kind of my stump speech, but I mean, we have a crisis in this country. Our maternal mortality rate is about 3 times the rate of other developed countries across the world. Not only do we not treat our moms well, we don't treat our moms of color, you know, even to the same standard, which is not well, we treat them worse. You're 3 times more likely to die if you're Black than your white counterpart. So, you know, we have a crisis. We need change. And we need patients to demand these experiences from their doctors. Because it's not just going to happen from the entrepreneurs like Juan Pablo. I think I'm cool. I think I'm interesting. And I think I can convince doctors to do a lot of these things. But I can't convince everyone. And we need help. Because if we don't do something, more moms will die. And that's unacceptable. So the only thing I ask is, like, tell your friends, tell people. It doesn't have to be baby scripts, but the change will come if patients are going to their first doctor visit and saying, why aren't you remote monitoring me? Why aren't you giving me a digital option or a virtual experience kind of modality? And that will make change happen faster than one company trying to slowly grow the impact of baby scripts in the market.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Juan Pablo Segura. Again, you are the co-founder and president of Baby Scripts.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's H-K-E-L-L-Y at ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.